My name is Fernando Ferrer. I was the borough president of the Bronx from 1987 to the end of 2001. And I'm currently a member of the Board of Trustees of City University. So back together with Ostos and all the colleges in the Bronx that I have so much respect and regard for. Ostos's impact has been extraordinary in my personal life. I cannot tell you how many people I meet and encounter when I go to the dentist office or doctor's office for an x-ray who have come to Ostos. But when I was borough president, I hired some young staffers who graduated from Ostos. In fact, one who I have in mind, he's no longer with us, but I came here to deliver a commencement address. And I remember he was one of the student demonstrators. And he was banging on the big glass partition that was a sort of visitor's gallery down into the auditorium. And quite a guy. He impressed me so much, I thought he should be working for me and for the people of the Bronx. But that's what most of those people were when you consider that the college was born out of a demand and struggle. Hard to believe almost 50 years ago when there wasn't a unit of City University with an identity that was uniquely Latino. And there wasn't a unit of City University that had a mission that was uniquely ours to lift people out of poverty and to give them a pathway. That's what Ostos became, whether people were conscious of it or not, over five decades. So when people gravitated to the opening, I remember in 1968, there was so much going on. And Ostos was one of those things.
What was going on?
Oh, what wasn't going on? The Vietnam War, Martin Luther King assassination, Robert F. Kennedy assassination. It was a very tough year for America and a tough year for New York. New York City was in a very tough way. And out of that struggle came community organizations, community groups like the Young Lords, that began to see our institutions as, wait a minute, we own them. They just don't sit here and expect us to walk in like customers. We own them. Same was true for Lincoln Hospital and Ostos and so many others that that became identifiably community institutions. So from its first presidents, there were, I looked on the wall of the portraits of the presidents. I mean, I knew most of them, called them friends. And they were great leaders for the school, each at the right time, bringing something very special to the institution and helping to grow it. Because this was an institution that wasn't going to grow without help. And without allies, and without people who believed in its mission. So very happy to see all that's happened.
How did you come to want to be a borough president? How does that happen to a human being?
Well, I was born and raised and educated in the South Bronx. So obviously, this is familiar territory to me. I don't think anybody gets bred to be a borough president. It's a series of accidents, whether they're happy or not, that happen in your life that that lead you in that direction. One of the things that led me to that was a sense of outrage, frankly, at what had happened to the South Bronx and to my neighborhood. That's why I got into public service in the first place. And I think that's what ignited the fight for a lot of institutions in the South Bronx, a sense of outrage. How can this happen to us? People here who come here, all they want to do is work. All they want to do is sacrifice and struggle to support their families. And then the bottom falls out of the South Bronx and really all the South Bronxes of the city. You come on a street. I remember it vividly from when I was in college, coming back one day to a neighborhood that I had seen only a few weeks before, and it was gone. I mean, literally gone. 1971 on Wilkins Street and Jennings Street, Wilkins Avenue and Jennings Street, in the mid-Bronx, you would go there one day, literally, and see outdoor stalls and a butcher, grocers, dry goods selling, you know, sheets and socks and everything. And a few weeks later, it was a moonscape. It was like nuclear winter had come through. Gone were the shops. The buildings were burned out. I mean, the difference was so stark that, I mean, maybe some people got used to it, but I have never gotten used to that. So that's one of the things that ignited my desire to be in public service. I took what happened to the South Bronx personally because it happened to my neighborhood. And I tried to make it my work to improve these things as a public servant. And I suppose I still have a public service gene that's stubborn. So being on the MTA board and the City University Board of Trustees gives me an opportunity to continue to give back, because there is no reason why a kid from the South Bronx like me should ever have been, you know, the 11th borough president of the Bronx and about that close to being mayor of New York City, if not for people who stepped up and I didn't even know and didn't know me, but believed in a future for our community.
What did you do first?
Well, I started organizing tenants, and then I ran for the state assembly. I got my brains beat out in that election, but the next one, the city council, worked out just fine, and I got elected. Next election after that, got reelected. And then wet tech scandal claimed awful lot of politicians in the Bronx. I was borough president within a few months of the first series of indictments, and then charged with not only trying to rebuild the Bronx, but rebuild faith in the Bronx and confidence in our decision making, that we weren't all crooks. And it's something that I don't think it was torture for me. I enjoyed doing it as a labor of love. Why wouldn't anyone want to be able to do that? The South Bronx, it seemed to me, was mostly Puerto Rican. But then, of course, I didn't know every corner of the South Bronx as a kid growing up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew Fox Street and Avenue St. John. I knew Orchard Beach. All I saw was Puerto Ricans. You know, you realize as you get older and a little more sophisticated, you share the planet with a whole lot of different people. But in our neighborhood, we were all, you know, we all knew each other. We all understood our cultures. And then I was fortunate enough to, in high school, have passed by a meeting one day where I saw some of my friends inside. And there was a meeting of Aspira. I said, this is interesting. Let me walk inside. You know, one thing leads to another. Young woman who I met in Aspira became a president of Hostos Community College, Isara Santiago. Her sister, her late sister, Tina, was my high school counselor, a woman who I absolutely adored. NYU in the Bronx when it lived in a good neighborhood, and Spelman High School. So I, you know, had a pretty good education. At around that time, I was the, about 10 years after the founding of Allstars, I was the director of community development in the borough president's office and one of the founders and incorporators of the South Bronx Development Office, first Bronx in the South Bronx. So, yeah, you encounter an awful lot of people trying to do things that tried to make things better. Well,
or all the people that were involved.
There were a lot of people involved in the success of Allstars, and in the development of Allstars. I mean, there were a lot of things I got involved in, including the dental hygiene lab, the new building where the old Savoy was. We were going to rehabilitate that building, and then when it turned out it could not be rehabilitated, it had to be demolished, we built a new building, apparently. You know, because apparently that was the only option for trying to produce the space that a growing Allstars Community College needed. I mean, when Allstars was first born, it was born in an old tire factory and then moved across the street to the old Pitney Bowes, where we're recording this afternoon, and has grown since. I mean, to a lot of places. Allstars is a very busy place. It's a pathway of opportunity for a lot of people. And it's not only the Puerto Ricans I grew up with as a kid, it's the Dominicans, it's the Central and South Americans, it's the African Americans and the Caribbean Americans who come here because this is a pathway to opportunity. This is a way that they can get the certification they need to support themselves and their families and become contributing parts of New York and even beyond. I mean, you'll see Allstars graduates everywhere. And that's, you know, that's a very important legacy for all the people who stood on picket lines, for all the people who had ideas about developing the place and making it better, for all the people who were the funders, for all of the people who were champions of Allstars. Flora Mancuso Edwards was the president then, and she wanted to join the buildings. So she came up with a proposal for a pedestrian bridge, which I thought was a great idea. I thought the first couple of proposals were clunky and sort of made the Bronx. This was a gateway to the Bronx. I mean, this lower part of the Grand Concourse, this is sort of the way you come into the Bronx. So I thought it should be a much more welcoming and revealing gateway. It was a good idea to have, and I'm very happy to help with it, but I suggested some changes in their design that might make it a more impressive gateway. So when people drove through, they go, oh, okay, this is the Bronx. It's the first thing you see when you drive into the Bronx. You cannot separate culture from the students who walk in the door and the community that you serve. It's all part of that same thing. And over the course of time, you know, people expect cultural offerings that reflect their footprints in the sand in the Bronx and in New York. And that's a reasonable expectation. My good friend Joe Canzo Sr. Gives lectures here on Tito Puente, who was a great friend and just a wonderful guy. A quick story about Tito Puente. Yeah. It's really not about him. So I'm borough president first couple of years. Celia Cruz's birthday is coming up. So we want to throw her a big birthday party in Borough Hall, which is just a few blocks up the Grand Concourse. So she said, oh, yeah, let's do that. You know, we wanted a big ceremony for her. You know, this is La Reina de la Música Latina. You know, I mean, only one queen, that's her. And she was just a wonderful person. She asked, can I bring my backup band? Sure. She said, I want to sing a little bit. Okay. I didn't know her backup band was Tito Puente's orchestra. So, holy God. When they all showed up, it was like a mob scene. And we had sent out invitations for it that we would fill the rotunda. We had to open up the three doors, Grand Concourse, Girard, and 161st Street, put loudspeakers on there and have an impromptu concert on the steps of Borough Hall because the place, there would have been a riot. And it was one of the best times anybody ever had. I mean, it really was. She shows up with her backup band, Tito Puente and his orchestra. I mean, I should have known, but really something.
A concert for the people.
Impromptu. Nobody expected it, but it was just one of those things. And believe me, not only was the rotunda of the Bryce County building packed, and it took us a while to scramble and get loudspeakers and stuff and hook them up, but the steps, and they're very long steps coming up three sides of the building, were packed too. The streets were packed. I mean, it was just nuts. And shows you even more than putting it on the radio, letting people know what's going on and just word of mouth, they see two great iconic artists just happen to be in the neighborhood and perform. They're showing up. Young man I talked about who was a student agitator who I hired, Mario Rodriguez, was one of those guys, the late Mario Rodriguez. Good guy. Isauro Santiago was, I thought, phenomenal. And what some politicians of the day did to her, I'll still never forgive. I have a tough time forgiving that, especially to someone who gave so much to this institution. Tony Santiago, an early president of Hostos, good man, and a social worker by trade. I mean, just a wonderful guy who was an inspiration to students, especially students with disabilities. Most people look at his portrait and don't know he was blind. Read Braille, but a very impressive man. And then David Gomez, who I met here as a young professor 3 million years ago, when we were both young and had dark hair. I'm glad he's the president today. He's a good guy and the kind of leader that Hostos needs today. Florida, great friend, one of the most intensely smart people I ever met. Really smart and like a laser beam on her. In fact, if you met her, you would think laser beam. On her objective, it was for Hostos. She was going to get it done. Down to Fellow, who's now at Queens College, a very bright and able guy who brought Hostos to a different level. And that's why he got a promotion. And that's why he is remembered fondly here. A lot of good things happen in this place. And to keep it from getting defunded, to keep it from getting shrunken back, you know, when there was a fiscal crisis, time to close it. Oh, no. And I remember that fight very well. There were all kinds of challenges that Hostos faced over time. But not to romanticize a lot of that.
Of course.
It was all about the people who came through here. This was a pathway to opportunity. That's what this was. This was a place where people came to learn, to get what they needed to be able to support themselves and their families. As long as we didn't lose sight of that, this is the place where American dreams were made. Wherever you came from, nobody asked here. Doesn't have a rich alumni association to endow a professorship or anything like that, but these are workaday people who now put their kids through college, support their families, and make their children and their neighbors proud. What more do you want an institution to do? What more could you ask? Anybody who walks through here and who tries to help has got to be proud of what Ostos has accomplished. I certainly am.
They do so much with so little.
It is the truth. They do a lot with little, but, you know, that gets to be a lot of people's story. What sets Ostos apart is, in spite of any of that, it succeeds. That's what sets it apart. It succeeds in getting people, whatever the obstacles, in a pathway to providing for themselves and their families. I mean, that's a very big deal in New York. And it's, you know, look, I went to a liberal arts four-year college when you were expected to get out in 4 years on two scholarships. And it wasn't only because I was the smartest Puerto Rican on Fox Street. I was, but that wasn't the only reason. There was opportunity. There was opportunity every day here. I mean, for everybody. It was a different thing to go to a four-year liberal arts institution. You come here, you look at the graduating classes. They're not fresh out of high school. They're single mothers. They're working parents. You know, I mean, they got stories. And their stories are the things that can either keep them back and not achieving or move them forward if an institution is willing to extend its hand and partner with you and say, okay, let's move together. We're in this together. Ostos has always been in it together with their students. As I get older, and I hope wiser, I focus less on battles and more on human faces.
Why?
Because that's what this is about.